Welcome to the Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm Martin Glassborough and I'm joined by my co-hosts Chris Evans and Gavin McLaughlin. It's a while since we all got together for a podcast, so this one is going to be a general catch-up. So how is everyone?
Yeah, I'm great, Martin. Thanks for asking. Back fresh from DockerCon, which we'll catch up with later in the podcast, and just getting over the jet lag.
Oh, bless, it's a hard life, isn't it? Hi, everyone, it's Gavin here. Hello, Martin. I haven't been travelling, so I'm being good and sat in my office listening to you guys.
Staying dry at the moment, Gavin?
Yeah, it's pretty good at the moment. I'm sure it'll all go horribly wrong soon.
Excellent. So we're beginning to head into conference season, and first up would be Dell EMC. Dell EMC World is just around the corner, and it's about normal at this time for EMC to start flooding the storage world with announcements and new products, or renamed old products, pretending to be new products. Before we start talking about anything new, what do we make of the announcements around the future of DSSD?
Well, that's a great question. I think I was absolutely gobsmacked that Dell had decided to drop it as a product, I have to say.
Yeah, but isn't Dell all about commodity and not so much about niche products? Or niche, I guess, for our American listeners?
Yeah, good point. I was thinking more from the investment side of things. You know, they paid $1 billion for it, EMC. They put another $300 million in, I think, at a minimum. And it just seemed a surprise that what was seen as being the future of where their storage platforms were going suddenly is now scrapped, or at least that particular project is scrapped.
Complete open disclaimer here. You know, I'm involved, as you guys know, with one of the NVMe players in XIO. So I've actually been doing quite a lot of talk with the analyst community, particularly starting to get to the press now, about the NVMe market. And everybody agrees that the server NVMe market is, so servers with NVMe storage stuffed up the back of them, is niche. But there, the NVMe storage, standalone storage marketplace is even smaller. And I think you've got a niche market and then a sub-product that's even more niche underneath that. And I think part of the problem with DSSD was it was just too narrow a stream for them to really spend money on. And you know, Dell is all about cutting costs internally. And I just don't think they're going to see the return on investment. But you're right, it's a huge write-off.
Yeah, I can't see Dell's traditional customer base being interested in an NVMe over fabric type of array at the moment. But generally not the people who are going to be playing in that space.
It's also that, you know, NVMe probably right now needs solution stacks and, you know, in those niche spaces, wherever that be analytics, cybersecurity or whatever. And that's not really, from what I've seen, Dell's bag. He's actually going out and building those solution stacks with software providers. Again, it's more about commodity product.
I also wonder if it was just a little bit too early to the market. I think we've seen this happen before, where first mover isn't necessarily an advantage.
Well, do you know, I think from that perspective, Martin, I wonder why EMC always chooses so early to announce their new solutions and their new ideas, because they talk about things, they bring it to them, they talk about it way too early. All that hype gets built up and then it drops back. And then, of course, realism sets in terms of how are we going to actually consume this product and use it? And then suddenly everybody thinks, oh, maybe it wasn't quite what we thought it was. And they do this all the time, this hype cycle thing. And I don't think it does them any good whatsoever.
It's the old what IBM used to do.
Yeah, last time I remember this big time was all the hype around Atmos. Do you remember that, guys?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And that's a product which has gone nowhere, really.
You know, the other thing as well is I was really surprised that they were investing in something significantly, which was using proprietary hardware. You know, we'll talk about the violin story later, but it smacked me of violin. It really did remind me of, you know, the SLC proprietary chipset. You're going to pick up a few deals, but there's going to be a lot of people wary and nervous of going down a proprietary route. And again, you look at everything on Dell and a lot of EMC's books, is that whilst, you know, they are charging a premium for a lot of their products, they do use commodity off-the-shelf componentry.
Yeah, I mean, EMC's auto marketing machine gets so far ahead of itself and often doesn't really explain what the product's really going to do for somebody. All they all generally tell you is it's going to be great, it is great, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. In fact, they could probably get Donald Trump to do their marketing. He'd be great at that.
But doesn't that come back to that thing again, Martin, about you hype it up so much that people think, wow, this is going to be brilliant. And actually, when people look at it, they go, hold on a second, I've got to put custom HBAs or controllers in every single server I want to connect to this. There's a limited scale. Availability. And then people look at what they've already got used to in terms of things like Fibre Channel, and then they think, oh, that's going to make a big difference for me in terms of how I have to think of architecting this and how it connects. And it becomes a very different proposition when you start looking at the realism of taking that sort of technology.
Yeah, I think that's a problem with the storage market in general now. People are so busy trying to find what the next big thing is, they're forgetting what the storage market is, and it's just about how you store data for a long period of time. It's going to be very hard for people to come up with massive differentiators, so we're going to see more and more people just making stuff up, I think.
That's true, but don't underestimate the fact that the price was a major factor in this.
Yeah, very expensive.
Having seen the pricing of the DSSD stuff, this is not cheap. And knowing, you know, things like the price of Intel's dual-ported NVMe drives and then looking at the price of DSSD, that was expensive stuff.
Yeah,
really expensive stuff.
And very expensive.
And extremely hard to justify. And again, comes back to the, you know, at what point will it turn into a commodity product, and would having a proprietary hardware limit them? And as I said, shades of violin. But fair play to the original DSSD guys for selling it for that price. They did a great job. Hats off to them.
I'm sure we'd all love to have a business that we could say that within that short space of a time before having any real customers, we'd managed to sell it to a vendor for $1 billion. Well, hey.
Yeah, that's not bad, really. That's good business on them, not so good business on EMC. So, anyway, should we move on to another piece of fun stuff with EMC? What do we make of EMC and the Nexan spat? Are they going to have to rename Unity? Do you think they're going to settle in some way? And if so, what do we think the new names for the... well, it's been rebranded at least three times, as far as I know, from Clarion, Solera. So where to next for EMC with their mid-range storage array?
So I think my first comment would be the fact that somebody at EMC needs to... I was going to say taken out of shop. That might be a bit aggressive, but somebody needs a good slapping for not being ahead of the game. And if you look back at some of the attempts to claim why they thought Unity was their name, the rewrite of the code, I think, was actually called Project Unity. And they were trying to claim through third-party blogs like Chad Sakatch's blog that somehow that was prior art, and that because they'd mentioned it there,
what?
That they could use that as a claim. Oh, yeah, that was in the claim. That was in the claim, that his blog was mentioning Project Unity, not the product name or a thing put in front of customers. What a load of nonsense. But at the end of the day, somebody in EMC should be in trouble for it. Having said that, I think actually for Nexan, it's a great move, because what they can do is they can capitulate and say, all right then, pay us loads of money, we'll rename our product, which nobody really knew in the market and probably wouldn't really be that worried about, but it could give them a chunk of money to go off and keep the company running.
Yeah, exactly. It's awareness. I always say when you get into those situations, it's fantastic. You know, when I've had battles in the past with people like NetApp, and someone said, well, they might come after us and make a big publicity about it. It's brilliant. You know, working for a small company. Love that. Thank you. And, you know, I'm sure that's not what's happened, but it's always strange when these things happen. And at the end of the day, the people that win the most out of this, we all know, are the lawyers.
Maybe Nexan will have their array formerly known as Unity or something.
Maybe they should just use a symbol. Just finishing that one off, Martin, I think Nexan, they'll probably be the ones who change, but they'll do it because they get given some cash to do so, and everybody will be happy and we'll move on.
I don't wonder if it'd be cheaper for EMC or Dell AMC to actually go and buy Nexan than actually pay them off. That would be a more amusing situation. Oh, we'll just buy you then. You're annoying, so now we'll buy you. So let's move on to what we might expect to see at EMC World. EMC have been busily pre-announcing a lot of stuff, including the all-flash Isilon nodes, known as Project Nitro. What do people think about this? I mean, I have some opinions about this. I have to be a bit careful what I say on this, because I know a little bit more about it. I think EMC are very much aiming this at the media broadcast world, where they see we have a high-performance requirement, certainly with things like UHD, 8K compositing workloads, and they don't have a real player in that space at the moment, and it's quite a big market for them. But I'm still not convinced. I think there's a lot of things they need to overcome. They're going to have to think about the interconnects. I know it will be 10 gig enabled, but I know there's still a lot of debate about whether it's going to be a 40 gig, 50, 100, InfiniBand connect. I'm just not convinced about that market, how big it is.
Is this a counteraction to things like Pure's FlashBlade? Is this trying to sort of put just literally come out with something that meets a competitive request when they go into customers?
For me, I just don't get it. To me, it's like putting a turbo engine in a transit van. You know, there's going to be people that need it, but really? Do you need a turbo engine in a transit van? It just seems strange. I just don't get the ultra-high-performance NAS marketplace.
Yeah, so a couple of other thoughts from my perspective. I know that seeing where primary data were heading, they were putting their kit in front of traditional Isilon and using it as an accelerator for media, for other types of usages. And is this just a competitive play that says people want to have flash, and this would actually help counteract some of the other things they see in the market, so stopping people moving to Pure or putting the primary data type stuff in front of it? Yeah, a question for you, Martin, I guess, and that's, is this an all or nothing? Is it either all flash or disk? Is there any sort of in between? Is there a hybrid offering, or were there already hybrid offerings?
Well, the Isilon itself is already a hybrid offering. All Isilon nodes these days have SSDs in. You can either use those as a metadata, or you can place data on there, and you can set up pools. So Isilon for a long time has had the concept of pools where you can move data around. So you can age data into it, or you can cache data. So it's not an all or nothing. And as far as I can see, you can mix and match for node types anyway. So you could have a group of nodes which were Nitro nodes, and then you could have your bulk nodes which would be disk nodes. So
okay, and are they changing the protocol in any way? So I know that with the primary data stuff, one of the things that they were doing, they were using a bit of tweaking of the NFS protocols to allow them to distribute the workload across the nodes more efficiently. I wonder if there's a need to do that in order to make sure that you're using the flash more effectively.
I don't believe they're doing anything particular with the NFS protocol. And a lot of people are actually moving more and more to an SMB protocol as well. SMB protocol's performance has gone up, and the advantage of SMB protocol is it's so well supported under Windows, whereas NFS protocol at times can still be a bit flaky. And right. You'll find certainly in the media and broadcast world, we are moving much more to a mixed environment where we will have Macs and Windows and Linux boxes, obviously.
Okay, so SMB becomes a bit more important in that scenario.
Yeah, SMB's become very much more important. And we try and move people across onto it where we can.
So yeah. It's interesting, though. You know, you've talked about this having a defined use case in a particular niche sector. And then we've just talked about DSSD being a little bit too niche. You know, I wonder what the cutoff point is for Dell EMC these days of what does the market size have to be for them to invest in the technology?
Yeah, I agree. You know, there seems to be this overlap between supercomputing, media, and actually it's moving more into the enterprise. As we see more analytics workloads coming through, high-speed storage may be important, and certainly at scale. But I think DSSD, for instance, Gavin, is ridiculous performance. It's the only place you're really going to need it, as far as I can see, is in high-frequency trading. And that's not a big use case.
There's been numbers bound around $500 million marketplace and stuff like that. I think, you know, I'm seeing the use cases in a few areas because obviously I'm playing in this space at the moment. Cybersecurity, there's a lot of cybersecurity firms that are interested. You're right, high frequency market trading. There's actually a lot of analytics space, both across medical and different areas, where you've got very, very high volume data sets where they want to ingest at the same time as running analytics across it. But it is niche. But the whole point here is that pretty much all of those use cases have a common thing. Very high bandwidth input and also very low latency all the way through the solution. So having it tightly coupled to the server is the way forward. So I don't see the point of having, at the moment, an NVMe storage target. It kind of needs to be tightly coupled to the server. So servers with, you know, a petabyte of NVMe flash stuck up its backside kind of makes sense. But I just see, and don't get me wrong, there will be NVMe over fabric targets, but it's a niche use case out of a niche market sector.
So how does that get us back to all flash Isilon then, sitting at the end of an NFS connection?
Well, that's the same thing, isn't it? There's going to be use cases, as Martin said, in media. It's what's the size of that market and how much can they gain, bearing in mind they've got a lot more competitive pressures than they did, for example, with DSSD.
And I also think it just allows them to continue this constant theme they have about an all-flash product set, so everything is all-flash. I think the Isilon's there as all-flash because it needed to be.
It's the right tool for the job, though, isn't it? We've talked about this before. It's as though the market's regressing. Why are we talking about the componentry that's inside the solution rather than talking about what the solution actually delivers? Whether it's all-flash hamsters on spinning wheels or little leprechauns rumbling around in a box, it kind of doesn't matter, does it?
That's an EMC thing, though, isn't it? I would have said, you know, if you're especially EMC world and looking back over the years, it's all been about what is the technology, what is in it, why is it super fast, why is it brilliant, why are we doing this with it, why are we making bigger, more IOPS, you name it. All that sort of stuff is all really talk about the hardware, get the guys who are on the girls who are on the floor really hyped up about the fact that you've got a big, new, shiny box, because that's traditionally what they've always talked about, and that doesn't sound like that's necessarily a good move going forward.
But I think we find that across the piece, in certainly in the storage technology world. IBM do it, Pure certainly do it. So I think from storage we need to start moving away from the technology to solutions, but I don't think the traditional guys are anywhere near that. They're still thinking, how do we shift as much tin as possible?
Well, let's wait and see. 6 months' time, we might be talking about EMC, Dell dropping another product line. We don't know. What certainly needs to happen on their product lines are consolidation. And I do hope that there is a strategy posted at Dell EMC World that kind of makes sense and shows consolidation of product lines. Because right now, I'd hate to be a sales guy in there or girl in their place because it's just too confusing. There's so many tools to solve the job that it's ridiculous.
So yeah, it's interesting you talk about consolidation because one of the things which has thrown me for a while yet is the overlap between vSAN and Scale.io. Both Dell EMC products, I mean, obviously one VMware branded and one Dell EMC branded. I'm just not seeing the sense behind this move at the moment. vSAN is so VMware orientated, whereas if you see certainly the larger customers these days, they all have at best. They will certainly have a large vSphere estate, but more and more of them are having OpenStack or some other cloud as well. And the advantage if you went down the Scale.io route, eventually if you go down the Scale.io route, means you could share that storage tier between your clouds, so you could move data at that level. If you go down on vSAN, your vSAN vSphere environment becomes very siloed.
Yeah, I think you've got an issue on a number of levels here. So first of all, VMware was always kept as a separate company. So what it did was theoretically isolated and independent from what EMC actually did. So going off and developing vSAN in isolation doesn't go against the business model for VMware. And they had to find new products that were going to come into the market and build their business because vSphere on its own wasn't, and vCloud Air and any sort of cloud product wasn't. So they've absolutely focused on NSX and vSAN as areas of growth for the business. Now, as a standalone business, that's a perfectly sensible approach. Now, when you put VMware inside EMC, which it pretty much is 80% of, you end up with a situation where you've now got conflict because having a separate company that had its own business rules inside EMC doesn't work because, as you said, you've got overlap of product. And there's the problem with having this idea of a federation. There can be real conflicts of business direction and business strategy because of it.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how Michael Dell sorts this one out eventually.
The one thing I am hearing, though, is that they are about to go gangbusters on Scale.io, and there is going to be a big push on there. So, as you said, it's more flexible and more open. I can see that getting a heavy marketing push, certainly at Dell EMC World.
It's a really nice product. I will give them that. It's probably going to be a slow burner for them, but I actually think it's of the SDS products I've played with or looked at, I actually do like what they've done with Scale.io.
What specifically do you think you like out of it, Martin, that's differentiating compared to something else? So just curious, because having met, and we'll come on to it in a minute, some other people at DockerCon, there were some negativities towards Scale.io. It'd be interesting to hear what you think are the real sort of positive pieces.
I like the fact that it allows us to pull together isolated silos. So if you're in a pure Linux space, maybe not. But if you want to do some stuff where you want to share across a Linux, a virtualized estate, a Windows estate, they've done a lot of work on that, and it appears to work. And actually, the admin stuff isn't too... It's not as clunky as it used to be. They've made some rapid improvements in that. It may not have the best performance, and I'm not sure how well it will play if you want to in a straight container space, but it would allow the container host, for instance, could be looking after the Scale.io stuff, and you would be presenting out using the normal ways which you do with Docker.
Right. Okay. Interesting. It'll be interesting to see what, if that becomes a big message then at the event. What is it? A couple of weeks' time?
It's got some interesting places, some of the other stuff which I've done in the past in my career, with things like a GPFS, or Spectrum Scale, as IBM wants us to call it now, and layering that on top of it. It gives us a lot of flexibility there.
Do you think there's a marketing issue with the way the product's being pushed? Do you think internally, perhaps, because it's a software sale rather than a hardware sale, which potentially might be either recognised differently in terms of revenue, or perhaps has different margins, that there's an issue here with actually pushing it as much?
I think EMC sales have always struggled to sell software. I think this is where they're struggling with some of their other products as well, things like ECS as well. It's very hard for them to do a software sale unless they can use it as a way of clothing hardware. Gavin, you've got experience in the sales channel, so is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair comment. I mean, the transition, you know, I'm not shooting anybody here, the transition just from moving Symmetrics into selling solution stacks was painful and caused a lot of tears before bedtime. Moving into the software arena, as showed by the amount of investments they made in software and then jettison, it's hard for them. And you're right, it is where they can drag hardware with it. It's the easier play, and it is a mentality thing. And I think merging the sales force with Dell guys, it's going to get even worse. I mean, we've all seen the success of Dell selling, you know, software and services has been painful. So unless there's some new blood coming in there, I really don't see that changing.
So let's move on. So Chris, you're back from DockerCon. How was it?
Yeah, it was good. There were some interesting pieces, like the actual Austin Convention Center is about two blocks over from a homeless shelter. So there are an awful lot of, sadly, a lot of homeless people around in downtown Austin, which is really a bit of a shame. But in general, the event itself, definitely bigger. Bigger in terms of the number of people that are actually attending, obviously. But things like the actual vendors who are in the showcase floor, that was easily double what it was last time. So that was good. Good buzz around people, just interested in the technology still. And from a storage perspective, probably the most interesting thing is that persistent storage is coming to the front more and more as a discussion. And whereas, you know, maybe originally people said containers are temporary, don't need persistent storage, more and more that's coming to the front. And even more so now, bearing in mind that Oracle have said that you can now use any of their products as a container. You can get them as, I think it's test development, you can get it for free. And obviously, if you want to run it in production, you pay for a license. But of course, you're going to want your persistent storage to sit on top of that. So a lot of the companies presenting there were companies who had storage solutions.
Is it still Geeksville, or do you think it's turning into primetime enterprise?
Now, in terms of the way that they're developing the product, they're trying to develop it into that community and enterprise edition. So they've restructured the way they ship it. They're starting to talk about more of an enterprise type ecosystem in terms of additional products. And they had this new thing called Project Mobi, which is allowing them to bring all the products together a bit more consistently and develop them. So they're trying to get out of that. But then at the same time, there are still gaps. So they showed an example of transferring an enterprise application to a container when it was running in a VM. But actually, some of the gaps, there were huge gaps in terms of how you'd actually make that work and how you'd actually operate that and the operational processes that would need to be changed in order to run as a container. So I think they're trying, but I think there's still a lot of unanswered questions.
I think it's interesting that they seem to be moving or trying to move into some of where we would think was the legacy applications. So beginning to think a lot more about those applications which persist. I'm not sure that's entirely wise, but I can kind of see why they are doing it.
Yeah, so I had a little presentation with Stephen Foskett and his Tech Field Day guys, and they showed us this thing called, I think it's called Image to Docker, but basically it's meant to be a tool you can run that actually picks up a VM and strips out the application from it and allows you to then convert that to a container. And you look at it and think, well, it's a lot of effort to take a traditional application and actually move it across, because surely I'd just take the code and I'd run it differently and I'd rebuild the solution as a container. It might be quicker to do that. But they reckon that some customers were seeing, you know, I don't know, a third of their costs cut off by converting to containers from VMs. So there's a huge cost-cutting saving they think that they can offer. But it did. I don't remember seeing a full TCO that showed me how much effort it would be to manage the containers differently to the way I was managing VMs, which obviously in enterprises today, everybody's very familiar with that.
That's coming back to the classic point, isn't it? Is that, yeah, we can reduce cost by doing things a different way, but what's the compromise? And, you know, the only time it's going to change is if there isn't a compromise, then people are going to be prepared to put the effort in. But with the sound of things, from the point you made about the enterprise question, is there's too much compromise required to get that cost reduction.
If you're looking at rebuilding an application and starting again, starting from scratch, great. But I think what we'll end up seeing is, I don't think we'll see a mass transition in terms of converting applications that are out there that are traditional today. I think we'll see a slow trickle of applications dying and people looking at it and saying, is this now a suitable solution to go onto a container-based environment, and saying yes or no and moving it. And then, you know, you'll see a slow attrition. I guess a bit in the same way that you saw, not quite the same, but probably the same way you saw VMware take over large volumes of physical servers.
But I think VMware, the move to VMware, it was logically probably easier for some of these legacy apps. I don't see somebody suddenly running their PeopleSoft environment in a containerized environment.
I think I'll split that into two bits in terms of one saying, I think there's a transition that will occur, which happened with VMware. But I agree that I think the process was massively simpler when you were moving a virtual machine, because first of all, things like P2V just worked much more efficiently. And also, because it's a virtual machine, it's an exact replica of what you were dealing with when it was a physical machine. So bar a few things like backup and so on, you could look at a virtual machine and treat it the same way. So you'd patch it, you'd manage it, you'd log into it, you could talk to it across the network. Everything was fairly similar. And, you know, as long as you understood how to build an operating system on a physical machine, you could build one on a virtual machine. Now we're talking about something that conceptually is very, very different, and there are different challenges. And I think that's the thing that was slow it down.
I've got to ask the question, Chris. Was you aware of the incident with the video blogging guy getting asked to stop recording?
Oh, yeah. Reuven Cohen. Yes, I was. Yeah.
And talk about, as a PR guy, talk about shooting yourself in the foot. And I've got a hats off to the Dell EMC guys, by the way, for capitalising on that. I don't know if you want to tell the story.
Well, as far as I'm aware, he basically turned up and was unofficially, in inverted commas. And I do know Reuven, or Reuve as his Twitter handle is. I've met him before at a couple of events. And he is quite a character. So he is quite hyperactive. with. He's very jolly, very great fun, and I would imagine he could have wound somebody up just simply by his effervescent nature, if you like. So I could imagine how he could have wound somebody up. But basically, they told him he couldn't record on the show floor, I think. And as a result, Dell EMC said, "Come along and be our official video blogger," I think is what they said to him, and they were very happy to offer him a chance to come to the show and do it there.
Yeah, I saw free room in the Venetian and flights and everything paid for. It's just like, I've got to hand it, as I said, to the Dell EMC guys for capitalising on that and taking the PR credit. But, you know, any publicity is good publicity. I don't get why they stopped him from doing that. It just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, a strange move, but I'm sure they'll learn from that. We've seen many PR gaffes over the years from new companies,
yeah,
and existing ones.
Yeah, and we also see them continue as well. I think we've seen a few companies who don't seem to learn their lessons, but hopefully Docker will.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Violin, at long last, back from the dead. So being bought out by a company owned by George Soros, I believe. So do we actually see anything in this? Do we see, is there a way back for them?
I don't get it. I mean, I can get why it's been rescued. There may be some software elements in there. There may be some bits. But you've got a hell of a proprietary IP. I mean, who's going to buy into a proprietary hardware product that has just had the checkered past that they've had? I can get it if it was a commodity off-the-shelf componentry and you can reuse it and there's more you can do with it, or that they were separating the software and going off and trying and selling that on its own. I just don't get it in the current state. So maybe we're missing something. They are going to announce something, but I just don't get it in the way it is right now.
Your first comment was spot on, I think, Gavin, the fact that in the current incarnation, there's nothing there, because if they're... current incarnation was any good, they wouldn't have gone out of business. So there has to be some change, either to sell the products off to somebody else or to bring it back in a different guise or to focus on a different part of the market or technology. But like you, I'm struggling to see what that could be at this point.
I mean, we certainly seem to be moving away from the hardware. If you look at the exec team, I don't believe they've got anybody who's actually senior responsible for the hardware platform. It does seem to be it's going to be a software play. Yet again, I mean, software play in high performance is what their market is. A lot of the time, if you're doing high performance work, it's a hardware play. It's what you throw at it to make it run as fast as possible. So they're going to have to move away from their traditional space.
That ultra high performance marketplace, which is what they first burst into and had the initial success, is moving to the NVMe platform. And because they've got everything wrapped proprietary, we all had this conversation with them, you know, back ages ago, is that the problem you've got, you're so wrapped up in the hardware that when we bring the next technology out, be it NVMe, be it holographic storage, be it whatever, how are you going to adopt it quickly? And, you know, they're always going to be playing catch-up. And unless they've got something magical up their sleeve, I just don't get it.
Okay, guys, I think we're pretty much close to time for today. So let's not try to leave it so long before we do another one. And everybody, thanks for listening. You can find more podcasts online at storageunpacked.com. Follow us at Storage Unpacked on Twitter and join our LinkedIn group. I don't know what the long name is. Chris might know it. If you want to join in the conversation.
Yeah, I don't know either, Martin. Thanks anyway.
No one ever knows it. Cool. Just tweet us.
Nobody ever knows it. Yeah, just tweet us.